Recording in progress.
Recording in progress.
Recording. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the PHF Future Considerations podcast. It's been a minute, a little bit, since our last episode, but don't worry, we have a lot to talk about, and we have a special guest. So even if you don't, I just saw Michelle mouthing some things, completely throwing me off my rhythm to start the show. Appreciate
it's
that.
Been what a wonderful producer. Long way since you looked at me.
It's been one week since you looked at me.
Oh my God! Well,
no, this podcast is this podcast cannot become a Bare Naked Ladies cover band.
I don't see why not. All right, we have a lot to talk about. First of all, that the team in Montreal has a name. That's how long it's been, right? I think Montreal Force. Dan, Montreal Force. Tell me what you think about the name and the brand, the branding of the Montreal Force.
I like the name. It's different than what I kind of expected. They didn't go with the Montreal 7. They didn't go with the Sasquatches or the Maroons, the Marauders. They went with Montreal Force, and it has a nice sound to it. I love the jersey, especially that red one. It's kind of like a burgundy, like a red wine kind of color. Oh, I really want to see that in person. You know, sometimes they look a little different in person, but I like the branding and everything. I think we've talked about before on the show where they're playing different rinks, and we kind of knew that. They announced where all the different rinks are. That'll be interesting to see how that plays out all season. What kind of home ice advantage do they have? Probably not one really, but how much does home ice really mean in this league at this particular point in the game? I don't know if that means too much, but I'm excited. It feels more real now that we have a logo and jerseys and a schedule and all that stuff. So I think they did a really good job with that.
Well, Lenny, what do you think about the Montreal Force?
We all probably know this. I am a sucker for the color maroon. I am a sucker for black jerseys. They've got both of those going for them. I love the Montreal-Boston rivalry in sports, especially in men's hockey. I think it's a lot of fun. So having a team in Montreal at all is great, but having a team in Montreal that has like strong branding is even better. I think that it was really clear that they kind of had to pull everything together at the last minute.
In a couple of different ways I'll get into in a second, but to me, the jerseys that they put together and the logo, like, they did a really good job with what I'm assuming is a pretty short period of time. I love the logo. I think it's really cool. I think it's cool to have the colors not be Habs colors. Kind of like they did that with the 6 too. Like, we're not going to do Leafs colors because we're not the Leafs. And, like, we don't need them. You know, I think that's really cool. I also just, like, I think another red, white, and blue jersey would be boring. But that's just me.
I'm big on the color. I like the colors. I was really, really pulling for purple. I wanted to see purple really bad. Didn't get it. We got maroon, which is like a distant cousin of purple, kind of, right? More or less. That's how colors work. I don't love the name Force. I think the logo is great for what it is, like the Florida Lee with the F. I think that really came together really well. But, you know, overall, like, it's the best part about this is that it's unique. Like, this doesn't feel like any other team in the league. And when you're a growing league and you have, you know, half a dozen, now seven teams, like, you want everyone to really be distinct from each other. You don't want to do like, I always think of this, like the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Toronto Maple Leafs jerseys. It's like, you know, you squint your eyes. It's the same freaking jersey. Right. So we won't have that, which is a positive. Like Dan said, that I think it's like that red with the little maroon fleur-de-lis patterns for that the alternate or the home jersey is a really, really gorgeous jersey. Like, might already be in the top 10 NWHL PHF jerseys we've seen. Like, it's so distinct. It should be what they wear all the damn time, but I am also a sucker for black jerseys. It all came together really well. So we have a name. That roster is still coming together. It's a little interesting note to add here really quickly is every signing's Canadian so far. So we were all expecting that to be the case. It's just like, this is going to be players from Quebec and Montreal, right? That's what we were all expecting. But I'm very curious to see if we're going to see players from outside that market land there, just because we're seeing more and more international players sign. And it'll be very interesting to see if Montreal will be able to kind of move the magnifying glass away from the paper a little bit, get a bigger picture, bring in some talent from outside the province, but we shall see. Talking a little bit, Dan, you already touched on this. Three new home rinks in the league, and a lot of discussion about all of them, one in particular, but why don't we start with Minnesota? We all know that the Whitecaps have had it home for a long time, which was the practice rink of the Minnesota Wild, right, Dan? A very distinct place to see, especially on streams and stuff. With I always mix it up. Is it was a tria or
tria
tria tria? Yeah, I always said tria or tria when I read it and wrote it. A new home for the Whitecaps, and a home with, from what I understand, greater seating capacity. That's the Richfield Ice Arena, and it seems like this is, it fits 13 spectators with room for standing for another 500. Yeah, so it's a much bigger venue than what they're able to do at Tria, which, that for a team that's sold out a lot of its home games over its history, like, more places to put butts is a very good idea to upgrade in that regard. And, you know, this is something, it seemed like the PHF hired someone specifically to find locations for these teams to play.
They
and
did.
It looks like they've been aggressive about this.
I think I've heard good things about this rink. I think there's something to be said for, like, how pretty Tria is in theory with all the glass. But at the same time, like, I'm always looking at this from a goalie perspective. Like, if for a day game, you are blinded for, if you're really unlucky, maybe two of the three periods. I think it'll be really nice. I also think that in general, like, having a rink that is only yours, or that, like, a community rink that you are the only pro team there, opens up a lot of opportunities for you to make money that people probably don't normally think about unless they've worked in sports. So, for example, I worked for a Major League Soccer team that plays out of Yankee Stadium. They can't sell any of the signage in that stadium because the Yankees own all of it. So there's a lot of money that they can't make off of it. Now, obviously, their logo's not on the field. Forget the fact that it's not a soccer field. So, you know, we're seeing that a little bit in the NHL this season, but for the Whitecaps to be able to have their logo at center ice and sell signage around the arena, that's on top of the greater seating capacity. It makes you feel more like a pro. You skate out on center ice and it's your logo that's there and it's your sponsors that are around the rink. I'm not sure that players notice that stuff, but as a person going to the games, it's something you would notice. And as a revenue stream, that's something that you would notice, like, operationally. But also, I think in general, I've just heard that, like, the amenities are much nicer there because it is not just a rink where players practice. It is built to be kind of a more permanent spectator, you know, arena.
Yeah, but their own locker rooms, their own training facility. Like, it has a second rink that is their practice rink. Like, this is, I mean, to be blunt, it's a step up. I mean, I was actually,
it's kind of the ideal setup. Like, if every team could have that seating capacity with their own training rink right there, I mean, that would be a much different league. I think you still got the Pride are still playing in probably a max, what, 700 person? Like, maybe you can fit a little more. You're not supposed to. With seating only on one side of the rink, they don't have their own locker room, really. Imagine if all of the teams had somewhere like this to play. So I think kudos to Minnesota and whoever picked that venue. I think it's a great venue for them. I'm really excited to see them grow into it. I think Minnesota loves its women's sports, and I would not be surprised to see them pack that rink if the marketing, you know, goes well, which is a whole other can of worms.
I think it's a little bit of a coincidence, but it's worked out the way that the Whitecaps are going through all these changes off the ice, with as far as management and who's on the roster. And now they get in this new rink. They have a new head coach. They have a new GM. They have a boatload of new players who are all pretty much local players. So it's going to be interesting to see. Everybody knows the Whitecaps brand, but do they know the Whitecaps team, right? Is that still enough to draw people to go out if they know that Jack Brodt or Winnie Brodt or Chelsea isn't going to be there? Is people still going to go? I'm pretty sure they probably still will. The rink, for those that don't know, you guys mentioned it's about 1,200. The seating goes all the way around, whereas in Tria and where Boston plays, where the Riveters played last season, the seating was only on one side of the rink. So you get a little bit more of a professional feel or you know, college maybe feel where you have the fans kind of all around you. So I think it looks like it's going to be great for them. By all accounts, it's a good step for them. And like Lenny said, hopefully that becomes kind of the norm across the league at some point. And then, you know, obviously you strive for higher goals than that, but for now where they're at, I think it's a good move, and I'm excited to see what the broadcast look like from there.
Yeah, it's something to keep in mind with all these new homes is the broadcast, right? It's something that if you're on ESPN Plus, you want to make sure that you have a good broadcast angle, or in some cases that you actually stream the games, which brings us to the new home of the Connecticut Whale, which is the ISCC, the International Skating Center of Connecticut. But the Whales' first two games will be played in, Milford, their practice rink, the Milford Ice Arena, is that right?
Yep.
So this is a new home for the Whale. I feel like the Whale, you know, with their time at Danbury, I feel like a lot of people, Danbury was a huge rink in terms of its capacity, but I think it left a lot to be desired as a home for the Whale. I think that was every Whale fan I ever spoke to over the years felt that way. And it's one of those things where Connecticut has a lot of ice surfaces, a lot of opportunities, a lot of potential homes for a team like the Connecticut Whale. So it's very interesting to me that they landed here. This, for those who don't know, the ISCC was once a more recognized name and had a lot of like events, like figure skating events. You know, that's where a lot of its identity and footprint in the community came from. So they want this to be like a big hit. So I feel like the community is very much embracing this. And it's pretty big to have the Whale move. I hope this is a step up. I couldn't find a lot of information about capacity or things like that for the ISCC, which was interesting to me that, you know, almost every rink we've ever seen in the PHF, you can find just Google, you know, it doesn't take that hard research of like, what's the seating capacity there. So it is a rink I actually hope to get out there to see what it's actually like, but it looks like it has a lot of the amenities that is we're seeing these teams get more, which is just that pro experience for the players where you have, there's an attached fitness center. There's all these other things. There's, you know, the locker room, all these things that we take for granted so often in men's pro sports are hopefully going to be in place for the Whale. And I mean, honestly, we're in the second half of the pod. We're talking to Emma Vlasic, and we're very excited to have her on the show, but this is a really important franchise to the league now. Like this, you want them to have a good home, and we all desperately want the Whale to have fans in the stands. So I hope this is a change for the better for every conceivable reason, because this needs to be a hit for the league. The Whale, this team deserves to have crowds, big crowds watching it. So I hope that's what we see.
I think to me, I mean, like I've heard good things about the amenities and like it's an Olympic size rink, which is really cool. It's somewhere that Olympic skaters have trained for years and years and years. So you know that it's a nice place. It's not, you know, but the biggest appeal for me is the location geographically. Danbury kind of isn't really very close to anything. Which is probably one of the reasons that they just couldn't get anybody into the rink. Like if you live in Hartford, and many people do live in Hartford or in the area, like you're not going to drive to Danbury. Even if your team is good, you're not doing that. Like, I mean, and it wasn't close to Boston and it wasn't really close to New York. So it was just kind of geographically and a bit of a doldrum. this rink is 25 minutes outside of Hartford, which is awesome.
It's a win right there, yeah.
It's great. You're not trying to fill an AHL arena, which I think makes it, you know, makes your attendance look bad, even if it's not. But you are close enough to an AHL team, maybe to cross promote with them. The Rangers organization has been pretty supportive in general across the board with women's hockey. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Wolfpack, you know, got in on some cross promo. On top of that, like, it's a metropolitan area and, you know, it's not terribly inaccessible from New York City. If you really wanted to make a weekend trip of it, you could. And people do that. And people drive down from Boston. I drove down from Boston to Hartford more than once for a women's hockey game when the U.S. team would play in Hartford. I would drive down. I wouldn't recommend doing it, but you could do it. And I think that it's definitely just like a more attractive location, even for the players, because they can live in Hartford. They can live in Boston if they really want to and commute. And for a team that's trying to retain a really talented core, all of those things are really important. So I'm interested to see how the setup is with cameras for all of these rinks, but I don't think there's really going to be too much of an issue with this rink just based on, you know, the pictures that I've seen of how it's like built. I think they should be okay. So maybe we'll even get some really good video of every game except for the first two games at their practice rink, where we will not have any, apparently not have any stream.
Super.
Here, I have a couple of things I want to say about that. The first thing, and the overarching thing, is like, that's just not acceptable in general. Like, there is no other pro league on the planet where this would ever happen. It just wouldn't happen. And if we want this league to be perceived at the same level as the WNBA or the NWSL or whatever, there are definitely NWSL games that get pushed to Twitch, and we complain about it every time, but they're there. And I can still watch them. Knowing that nobody, except for the people who are physically in the building, are going to have any idea what happened in those two games, which are at the beginning of the season, so they're really important games for tone setting. It's just like, it's year, what, 8? Right? 9? Yeah. I don't understand how that was allowed to happen at all. And I find it very hard to believe that there was nowhere in Connecticut they could play where you could have a stream, or you couldn't put it at a neutral site because they're doing another neutral site game. Like, somewhere, someone would have some kind of streaming set up anywhere. And instead, it sort of seems like they're like, you know, it's just Buffalo. And this is my other thing, is that this happened to Buffalo last season, where those two games were just like lost to the ether. And once again, it's Buffalo that's drawing the short straw. And I have to wonder if it was the Riveters, if it was Toronto, if it was Montreal, if it was Boston, would they be allowed to not stream those games, or would they have found a way to get the games on camera? Because I really think, like, especially for Montreal, if it was a Montreal weekend, I think that the Buttes get shafted. And this is another one of those times where I'm like, yeah, I didn't even have to look to tell you that was a Buttes weekend, because that would only happen to the Buttes. And I just don't think that's fair.
I don't think that has anything to do with it, but your point is well taken. I'm interested to see what it looks like. This is, I think, their 5th home rink in 8 seasons. I've been to all of them, so I've lost track of, I know I've been to Chelsea Piers, I went to Northford, Ice Pavilion, then they played at Danbury, they played in Stamford. They played in 2 different rinks, I think, in Stamford, maybe. So it's another rink for me to check off the list. It's a little further for me, but that said, I'm definitely going to make a couple trips up there. The Whale are going to be a tough load for their opponents, whoever they play, to handle. And they have a great group there. Colton's obviously a great coach. He's always been very appreciative of everything that we at the Ice Garden do for not only his team, but women's hockey in general. So if it's another 30 minutes for me to drive, like I'll make that. no problem to do what I can to help them. So maybe for those Milford games, I'll go and I'll broadcast the game on my phone on Twitter or something like that. I'll try and get like a seat in the penalty box and just kind of rotate back and forth when the play goes from one side of the ice to the other.
And as someone who tries to track stats, all I can say is pretty, pretty please. That's the other angle of this that
is so frustrating to me. It's unfortunate. It's not ideal. I don't know. I don't know how much planning goes into these things. I'm not a business person by any means. So, let's just see what happens. Maybe something will change. Maybe if we talk enough about it, maybe they'll find, maybe go to Danbury and play those two games. I don't know. But we'll see what happens.
Just to circle back, I think the point that Eleni raised is super important, that this is in the greater Hartford area. And that in of itself is such the big win here. It's very important to mention that it's unacceptable that we have two games that won't be streamed. You have a streaming deal with ESPN Plus, and it's something that the league embraces and celebrates and will put on the front page to anyone they talk to in the media. And then just a little asterisk in when the schedule is released. By the way, these ones no one will be able to see unless you're at the Whales practice rink.
And maybe it's a conspiracy theory to make us all go to that game.
To the practice rink game?
I just want to add one more thing. You mentioned the new rink being closer to Boston for commuting and everything. That's pretty well a good reason. I haven't spoke to her officially about this, but I'm pretty sure that's a big part of why Mallory Soliotis was able to, she didn't get asked back to play in Boston, and with her job, it kind of limits her options. And Connecticut is in a commute that she can make now, maybe, and maybe she couldn't have made it if they were playing in Danbury or somewhere else.
It's not a fun drive, but it's like I there was a Monday night that I left work at 4 and drove straight to Hartford for like a 7 p.m. game, and then drove back that night again. Not something I would recommend doing, but it was USA versus Canada. It's definitely doable. And I think that as you see, Boston starts to get extremely saturated as a market, there are absolutely worse ways to fill out the depth on your team than signing the players that Boston doesn't make room for. Yeah.
Can you imagine not making room for Mal Soliotis?
I know, I agree with you. But I think that, how much Buffalo must wish that they could just be like, oh, yeah, Boston won't pay you, come play here. It's kind of nice to be able to be close enough to be like, because there's so many schools in that area that, Boston gets first pick of, just like Toronto, before Montreal, got first pick of basically any Canadian on the East Coast of Canada. Yeah, I think it doesn't surprise me at all to hear that. I'm glad that they moved so that she's able to play, because I was going to be really sad if we didn't get to see her play pro this year.
Yeah, underrated player. Glad that she's staying in the league and has a new home. Again, continuing our theme of new homes, probably the rink that has been discussed the most, the American Dream Mall, East Rutherford. That is the new home of the Metropolitan Riveters for 3 years. This is a location that they paid more to land in than staying at the Prudential Center's Barnabas of Hockey House, where Dan and I have spent a lot of time and I've had adult beverages. Dan doesn't drink beer, but I think we've had a lot of pretzels together at the very least. But it's a new home for the Riveters. And from what we understand, it's a mall with three stories or three floors, right? Third floor will be just people in the mall, spectators, from what we understand. Second floor will be tables and seating. And then that first floor will be around the rink. Essentially, we're guessing folding chairs, 1,000 of them set up for games. There's a lot of elements of this, there's going to be a coach's office. There's going to be a dedicated player locker room. This is an experience for fans and for players unlike anything else. There's a lot of peripheral stuff here that we should acknowledge. There are bus routes that go to this rink. There's at a freaking theme park in the middle of this rink. There's a ski slope in the middle of this rink. Like, this is the second biggest mall in America. With that said, it's a hockey rink in the middle of a mall for a pro hockey team. It's very unconventional. You have questions about, like, what's the quality of the ice. I know, you know, I think Evo spoke out about, like, we know what the ice is like. The ice is good. We've been, and, you know, to be fair, the Riveters have practiced there. There's a lot to discuss about this rink, so I'll just kick it over to both of you to get it rolling with the American Dream.
It sounds like a great place for the players. And I don't want that to get lost in the discourse about everything else, because I think that's important. And it's very clear to me that that's what they prioritize with this. And that's great. I have no issue with that. I'm very excited for them that, like, coach seems happy with it. Both coaches that I've heard anything from seem really happy with it. It sounds like the player amenities are, you know, leaps and bounds beyond what they're used to having. And that's great. I think that, you know, with a team so filled with international talent, you would have to think that you're going to have to step up what you're offering to them in terms of the experience, not just the money, because, like we said before, you know, you have a flat cap. So the other things that you can offer players that are not salary make a really big difference in how you're able to build your roster. And you know, Evo basically told me that this definitely played a role in their ability to get those players to come to the U.S. And I think that's awesome. I just don't understand how it could possibly be feasible from a fan perspective for so many reasons. And I think that it's a little bit insulting almost that, like, nobody thought we were going to notice that there's nowhere to put seats. Like, what are they going to do? I mean, what am I supposed to look at those pictures and not think, oh, okay, I guess they're going to put up a bunch of folding chairs every time? Like, man, maybe once or twice a season for an exhibition at a really cool rink. But if that's your seating solution for the whole season, I'm not paying you season ticket holder money for that. Like, I probably would. But, like, I think that expecting people to do that is a tough sell. It really is a tough sell. And I don't know how you're going to make up for that. And then on top of that, just thinking about accessibility for mobility challenged fans and fans that may have wheelchairs and stuff, like, I don't think the balconies are even built, like, for you to sit and watch. I think it's, like, at standing level. And then I'm thinking about, like, where are we putting cameras? I don't know.
Are we putting media?
Don't even start with that. But I just think that, like, you're looking, I think the experience of watching the game from, like, looking down is interesting, but this feels like a gimmick rink for an exhibition game. It doesn't feel like the kind of experience that I would go do every weekend. And I also don't understand how you can sell tickets if it's in a mall. Like, are they going to put up ropes? On the
third floor, you could just walk past it, not buy a ticket, but watch the game from the third floor.
Or are they going to have interns, like, not allow people to come stand over there? That seems unlikely. It just, there's a lot that it feels like they just didn't think about. And it would be such a goddamn shame if people did not show up to watch this Rivs team. And I think that's what makes me upset, is that, like, the players deserve great amenities. The players also deserve somewhere that fans want to come and watch them. And I don't think that's this rink. The other thing is, like, East Rutherford as a municipality is pretty accessible, but the mall is not really. So that sucks. You basically have to take the train to East Rutherford and then take an Uber to the mall. I guess there's probably a bus line, but I don't...
Yeah, there's a bus line, but it's not easy to get to by train, from what I understand. But
no, you would take the train from Manhattan. You would take the train 20 minutes to New Jersey, and then you would be, like, fjording the river to get to the mall, I guess. There's definitely, from the fan side of it, a lot to be desired. And I think we're seeing that you have to balance what makes a place good for the players and what makes a place good for showcasing the players, which are two different things.
What about you, Dan? American Dream.
Look, I've been there a couple of times. I'm super, super, super skeptical about the whole situation, especially the fan part. Like, if you put those chairs out, they're going straight back. They're not like, are they going to build stands where you're sitting, you know, one the person behind
you. They're not tiered, so you can see above the person above his head. Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's not set up for that. Now, again, I've been there a couple of times just as a part of the mall, like walking around or whatever. And I've been there a couple of times last season when the Riveters practiced there. I think what they're doing this year is they're practicing during the day, like early mornings, late mornings. So maybe some more people will stumble upon them than they did last night when they practiced at night, because when I went to the practice, whatever time it was, 7:30 to 9, like, you get to like 8 o'clock, the mall is closed pretty much. Like, there was nobody around. Like, even if I took my girlfriend and she wanted to go like walk around to different stores in the mall, like, they were pretty much all closed. So there was nothing really else to do other than watch them practice. You brought up, you know, how do you limit people from just wandering in to check you out? And how do you actually charge people to come stand over there? Like, I don't know how that's all going to work. I guess they just figure like, hey, we've been losing at the gate for 2-3 years now. What's another year, right? You mentioned it's a 3-year deal. If I recall correctly, Mike can look it up, or we can look it up before the show is over. When they originally partnered with the Devils, I think that was a 3-year thing, and that was ripped up after 2 years. So those agreements, you know, that they had to deal with Twitch was supposed to be for multiple years. That ended up being 1 or 1.5 years or whatever. So those agreements, oh, 3 years, they're locked in. Like, we don't even know. Like, they might make it through half the season and something might change and they might start playing the game somewhere else. Like, we don't know what's going to happen. Hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully everything works out. I'm going there. Actually, we're recording this on Wednesday night, and tomorrow's Thursday. They're having a press event there. So I'm going to take the drive up there. There's not really access. Like, if you wanted to take public transportation, it's a hustle for you to get there. Like, it's, you have to really like the Riveters to go through those hoops and bells and whistles to go see them play if you don't drive. I'm skeptical about it all, but hopefully we'll get some, at least a couple of answers tomorrow. I don't think we'll get all the answers until like the games actually start. It's weird. I get that maybe it was a draw for the European players. We talked about it with the rink in Minnesota, Trier, with the glass. When they play afternoon games at this place, the ceiling is literally glass. So you're going to have sunlight coming down in all types of weird directions in the wintertime. I don't know, maybe there'll be some snow on it to cover it up, or maybe
it's not even just glass. It's glass with like a bunch of beams across it.
Metal, yeah.
There's a pattern. So it's not like, if it was just a plain glass roof, like, that's still very bright. Like, there's been times I remember at the Pride rink where we were like, can you please put the shade down? But it's going to be like a pattern. So again, if you're standing on the second level looking down, directly down onto the rink, it's going to be really
honestly, the second, if anybody listening out there, you guys, you've been to malls before, right? There's one level, there's a second level, and you kind of look down, there's a glass barrier. Like, that's pretty much the way this is set up. So think of, if you're not the first person up against that barrier, you can't really see anything. And then you add a couple more people, like, it's, you're only really going 1 or 2 deep. And then, you know, another thing is it's at a part of the mall where, like, it's kind of, it's off in a wing where it's not like central to anything else. Like, you don't have to pass that to get to other parts of the mall, I guess, if I'm remembering it right. And I'll figure it out again tomorrow, when I have to figure out where this thing is. I've been there obviously, but it's, I know it's at an end of like an end of a wing. So it's not like you have to pass through there to get to JCPenney's or Macy's or whatever, Vans Off the Wall, whatever store you're going to at the mall. So we'll see. You know, I'm going to try and be open-minded and head out there tomorrow. I'm looking forward to seeing most of the players are going to be there because they have practice right before this thing. So or some kind of training, I guess. I don't know if they're officially practicing yet, but we'll see what happens.
I feel like I'm a little more cautiously optimistic about some things about this rink, but what a lot of this boils down to for me, if this isn't a win for the fans who are going to be there, then it needs to be a win for the broadcasting. And there's nothing in place that makes me feel like it's going to be a win for the broadcasting, because this rink wasn't built with broadcast in mind, right? You add that factor with the glass ceiling, like Lenny said, like you have that, the beams, like it's going to change your perception of what happens on the ice as a viewer. Like, with like, there's a lot of little things, where I'm like, there's potential here. And I'm kind of waiting until I see it to like, quote unquote, pass judgment. But I feel like there's been so much discussion about this because, like, let's be honest, it's a little wacky, right? It's different. And I know we talk a lot in women's sports about, like, we don't need to do what men's sports do to find success. But it doesn't mean we need to get super duper wacky, like, right away. Like, this feels unconventional, like, outside the box thinking for a home that might be a little too outside the box. But I don't know. I'm willing to wait to see how it goes. I want to talk to fans after they go and see what they think about it. See what it means for them to get there without the public transit options. See what it means for when you're sitting in a folding chair and or whatever they do as a solution. Because let's be honest, like, this is the Riveters. Since year one, that Rosie the Riveter logo has been a huge part of the identity of this league. You got to get these things right, like their home rink.
You know what I hope they do? I hope they, you know, you go into the mall and they have those video boards now where it's kind of like a map or whatever.
Yeah.
They have like ads on them. I want to walk into the mall and I want to see like, hey, I'm Madison Packer from the Metropolitan Riveters. You can catch our games down in the Wing C or the East Wing at the rink this weekend when we play the Boston Pride, blah, blah. Like, I want to see those kind of advertising things. Like, I know
that everything you can out of being in the mall and really get everything you can. Wring that towel dry. Like, every potential upside you need to embrace because let's face it, you're working uphill when you move your rink to the mall. And that's what the Rivs are now, but we'll see what happens. But we don't want to spend too much time on this, so let's go over to the schedule. Schedule came out, Dan. You wrote about the schedule. Tell me about this PHF schedule.
There's a lot more games than there were last year because we have more teams, so that's first and foremost. Couple of things that jumped out to me. We've kind of touched on them. The neutral site game of Connecticut and Montreal, like I'm very curious to see where that ends up being. I hinted that maybe it could be at Hartford, where the Hartford Wolfpack play the AHL team of the Rangers. I believe they're playing the Providence Bruins that day or that night, and that Connecticut Whale game is scheduled for 3:00. So we could theoretically see a 3:00, 7:00 doubleheader.
They did that in Bridgeport.
Bridgeport is another. They're also having.
They did that not last year, the year before. Just before COVID happened, they did that in Bridgeport.
Frank Ketchum was the GM. I covered that game in Bridgeport. That was pretty cool. So we'll see. We'll see what that ends up being. The outdoor game, I'm definitely looking forward to that. I can tell you that right now, I am not making that trip to Buffalo. That is a Friday night game in Buffalo in December.
Everybody should go to the outdoor game once in December. I was cold, but the experience is...
I will just watch that one from home. last year, I think they lucked out, and they had a nice sunny day. It looked great on the broadcast. I'm sure at night it's going to look awesome. And I'll probably look at it and feel cold, but I won't be as cold as anybody that's there, and I'll be okay with that. But I will be in Buffalo at some point this season, I think. And the other thing, you know, opening night, I mean, Boston is going to raise their banner and they're going to have the team that they beat, the Connecticut Whale, in the building. That's pretty
rude.
Neat.
Just rude.
it's rude. I wonder if Connecticut will stay in their locker room until it's over and then come out, or I wonder if they'll come out and watch. And that's happened in the NHL, and
they're totally going to come out and let themselves get hyped to hell. And then they're going to win the game like 5-2. And every Pride fan is going to have a meltdown about whether or not the team is actually good. That's exactly what's going
to
happen.
And the other game I'm looking forward to is the first Montreal game. I think that's the same night they play at Buffalo. Excited to see what a new team looks like. We're year 8 and we have 7 teams. So we're moving this forward a little bit, inch by inch. And, that's pretty much, you know, every team I think has some peaks and valleys in their schedule, but I'm just excited for the actual games to finally get underway. It's been far too long of an off season.
There are Friday games this season, which is a new thing that we do. The Riveters, the other thing we didn't mention about the Mall is that if the Giants are playing, you will suffer. Not because the Giants are playing, but because of the traffic. There are some Friday games on the schedule, which I personally think are very cool and awesome, and we should do as much of them as possible because that rocks. There definitely are also Rivs games. Like, there's at least one that is still on a day on a Sunday when there is a football game. So
good luck with the traffic.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to go. But I want to talk about...
Friday is going to have traffic too. You know, people going to the city, like
it's the metro area. I feel like that's not avoidable for the most part, unless it's like a non-football Sunday at 2 p.m. What I want to talk about is the Montreal schedule. They're doing all these different little stops around Quebec. I don't think that this was intentionally like, let's not have a home rink and just do this. I think they didn't have time to get a contract together for a home rink for the full season, probably, because we didn't even know there was going to be an expansion team until like way too far into the summer. I mean, it's possible that this was intentional, but just, you know, historically, I would say it's probably more likely that they couldn't find somewhere to play the full season. And then they were like, why don't we just go to a bunch of different places? That being said, I think it's a really cool idea, especially for a new team, because you know, you're reaching such a wide, I mean, it's very different than trying to do a barnstorming tour of Connecticut, because it's Canada, and the rinks per person ratio in this, like the municipality of the Montreal area itself is crazy. It's like 5 rinks to a person or something throughout the country of Canada. So the one thing I will say is that some of the locations that they picked and did not pick don't make a lot of sense to me. I am not Canadian, and I don't know all that much about Canadian geography, but I do know that the third largest urban area in Quebec is Sherbrooke, and there is a junior team in Sherbrooke, and they are not going to Sherbrooke. And the third largest municipality in Quebec is only 150,000 people. So... if that's your third largest and you're going all the way down the list to like Rimouski, which is the 17th largest, that's 38,000 people in that whole town. I think maybe it would have been better to hit like the top 5-6 largest cities, just like in terms of raw numbers. But I still think it's a really cool idea. I guess I feel like especially Sherbrooke got a little bit shafted by this, and it would be really cool to have them play there. But I think it'll be fun, and hopefully next season, you know, they'll have somewhere that they play consistently. I don't want them to do this every year. I think that would be really tough for the players and really tough for the fans. But for the first year of the team, like, it doesn't bother me. I think it'll be really cool. And I'm excited for them. I am interested to see what's going on with the All-Star weekend, because last year it was supposed to be in Toronto and then it couldn't be. And they told us that it was going to be in Toronto this year because they couldn't do it last year. And now they're telling us that it's TBA. So either they're going to act like they never told us it was in Toronto and be like, surprise, it's Toronto. And everyone will be like, oh my God. Or they're going to act like they never told us it was going to be Toronto and they're going to put it in the Bahamas or something. And we're all going to be like, hey, what? I'm just trying to think of more tropical places because it was so fun to go to Tampa for the playoffs. Like the experience of being able to go to a hockey game and then go sit on the beach unmatched. I get it. I do get it. But also we don't know what the playoffs format is going to be like this year yet. So not only do we not know, I mean, I think those kind of go hand in hand because if you extend the playoffs for like weekends, then probably it wouldn't be in a neutral site. Maybe it will be the same and it'll be at a different neutral site and they'll put it in DC or they'll put it on the West Coast. So maybe they'll do it in Seattle or something like that. Or maybe they're going to extend it. I would love for it to be in Denver, but I feel like every time I say it, it sounds like I'm like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I don't know anything. And I have not heard anything about them coming out here. I just think they should. But maybe they'll extend it this year and maybe we'll get like series. Maybe we'll get like a best of
three
games. Friday, Saturday, Sunday game. Sunday game if needed. Do it. Why not?
I'm curious. My big thing with Montreal and their schedule is going to be so interesting to me because we have, I was kind of really crossing my fingers for the geographic rival for Minnesota. And some of these rinks are going to be a real, like, there's no option. Like, you have to fly teams to some of these rinks. Like, to put players on the bus to some of these is like good God, please don't do that to them. The other thing about this that is important to me is like you're doing this barnstorming thing. Broadcasting? You're going to get it right every time? Hope so. I really hope so because you have this new team. You have a lot of people who are interested and invested on it. And I think it goes without saying that the PHF has work to do to sell the PHF to the Canadian market and audience, right?
They have not done a good job so far.
No.
Especially the French, like they are straight up Google translating their copy.
Yeah.
And anyone who actually speaks French can look at it and be like, this is not being run by someone who speaks French.
No.
I just don't, if you're going to put a team there, that's got to be the first thing you do is hire someone.
Big old priority.
Because they will notice and they're not going to be like gentle about it. Like this isn't Minnesota. They're not going to be like, well, that's all right. They tried. They're not. It's not going to be like that. Like if you go a whole season and you fuck it up every time, good luck. That's all. That's all I'm going to say. Good luck. Please get it right.
So yeah, there's definitely a lot. Like I love the Friday games. I love that we're like, it's one of my favorite traditions that's come out of the NWHL PHF is the outdoor classic in Buffalo. Like, I'm glad we're still having these things that are just like, this is part of the PHF world as we have these things. Neutral site games continue to be a pretty good idea. I'm cautiously optimistic, like I am every year. Like, wow, I hope this works. For the most part, it works. So we'll see what happens there. Again, pretty please get broadcasting right, especially when, as Eleni very accurately pointed out, this Montreal team might be playing in front of like small crowds, right? This isn't like an established team. I'm sure there's a lot of fans in that province who are like, I really miss Lake Canadian. I really miss watching the CWHL team that we had, but it's not going to be an easy sell for them to be like, oh, and like, listen, I want to go watch Anne-Sophie Bitté play really, really bad. I would do it every weekend if I could, but if you're going to these smaller rinks and not going to every opportunity to go to a bigger market, then like you got to do a lot of work on things like social media to make sure people go. And so that means you really got to get things like the social media right. Since our last show, a bunch of signings, we're not going to go over all of them, of course, but we were going to talk a little bit about some news that Dan has. But first, just a quick couple big names since our last show. Janine Weber back. Love it. We mentioned the Whale. We're going to talk about a Whale a lot with our guests. Since the last time we were on, the Whale have done like a lot. We already mentioned Mal Soliotis, which is big. But Miri Räisänen and Katerina Mrazova, both back with the Whale. That's a big old deal. Mikaela Kava's back with Toronto. Teresa Venisova signed with the Toronto Six. So again, more and more these international players are coming. But Dan, what are some of the signings that haven't been announced?
There's quite a few, actually.
Dan has an index card that he's unfurling like a scroll.
I am. And for those that follow me on Twitter, you've probably seen me say that I have like 14 or 15 saved tweets for when these players actually get announced. just because I don't like scrambling and once, you know, if I can get ahead of the game a little bit, I did that. But then it became like, holy crap, I have like 15 saved tweets here. Like, why hasn't there been any announcements? It's like everybody just kind of like gave up. So that being said, I believe Buffalo and Toronto are finished putting their roster together for now. We know Buffalo has announced their pretty much full roster. They also announced some practice players who may turn into regular roster players at some point. So that's their set. I believe Toronto is also set as well. I think they're at 21 players now, 20 or 21. So I don't think they have any more signings planned. The Riveters, I think they're still looking for one or two more players, but nothing is imminent, so to speak. So, that being said, there are three teams. You mentioned Connecticut a lot there in the lead-up. In addition to signing Mallory Soliotis, they've also signed Tori Sullivan. That has yet to be announced, but that's a big get for them. Adds more depth to their forward group, another player that can put the puck in the back of the net, and another player that, you know, you bring into your room, it's not going to cause a ruckus. Like, she's a universally loved person, so that's just – that move is just like aces all over the place for, you know, and it's, you know, we talked about the banner raising, having Connecticut there. It's going to work out really nice that Tori and Mal Soliotis will be there to, I know they got their rings already, or at least Mal did, but they'll be able to be there and possibly see the banner go up if they're in the opening night lineup, which we assume they will be, but we don't know. That's a long ways off. So that's that. I also, we've talked about this a couple of times on here. I don't see any way that Shannon Turner is not back with the Whale. By all indications,
doing social media promotions now. So
yeah,
I mean, it's pretty,
the Whale
it's pretty
are
safe bet like that Turner's
back. Yeah, they're not even like hiding anymore. They're like, hey, can you and Theo do this video for us? And it's like, oh, yeah, sure. And the fans, you know, I guess if they haven't been following every day, maybe they just figured they missed the announcement that she signed or something, or re-signed rather. But I feel pretty confident saying that's a done deal. I mean, why wouldn't you? You know, they probably made it really challenging for her to say no with the team that they've assembled. And they probably could, you know, and you could smite me for saying something like this, but they could probably run it back and make it to the same spot they were without her this season with the team that they have already. But you add, you know, obviously a Shannon Turner to that group. I almost said Doyle. You know, that's, they're a formidable group, and I think they're going to kick some, you know what, this year.
I almost feel like even if you theoretically were in a place where you were like, we think we have enough better defenseman that she's not going to play very much, you want her just to be in the room. Cause like the emotional impact of just having her be there at all, the way that they lost that game in the final, that's enough. Like the emotional impact of her being there is enough to get them back, I think.
Yeah.
And maybe enough to win it all. So I hope they did legit sign her. I think they did, but
I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, I'll eat my hat or anything like that.
I would be very surprised. I would be very surprised.
Same not here. For nothing. She's also still a great defender.
yeah, that's what I mean. Like, that's not realistic anyway.
I would take
Shannon
Turner on any team in the league.
I don't want anybody listening to think that I was trying to slight her skills or anything.
Team is stacked. How much more stacked can it get?
If you look at the announced players, like, they're all right. That's going to be a good squad. We'll go over to Minnesota. They've re-signed two defenders, Maddie Rowe, Emma Stauber. They've been with the team. Stauber's been with the since the original Whitecaps, I believe, and Matty Rowe is a draft pick that's been with them since the Lake Placid season, I want to say. So those are two big re-additions, or I guess re-additions. They've also re-signed Jenna Brenneman to back up Lev. We thought that maybe they were going in a different direction, and I was quickly told that that was not the case from the source. So that's, you know, sometimes that happens. But another player that they have signed that is kind of a re-signing but isn't really a re-signing, but it's somebody that Minnesota fans are very familiar with, is Amanda Boulier. She left for a year, went to Boston, got a ring. Now she's coming back. Now she has two rings. She's won a cup with Minnesota and with Boston. Just an all-around great player. Unfortunately, she wasn't able to be with us tonight. That was going to be our guest, but you'll see that we have an equally awesome guest in the second half of this episode. So that's Minnesota. And then, you know, this is a long list. Boston, they kind of got like, what did they get to, like 8, 9, 10 signings? And then they just kind of like just ripped everything up and just pieced out us.
We're done for now. We'll catch you guys later. We'll get around to it later.
Every day at noon, we're going to announce a player. And that was like July 27th or something. And
there's so many lions still in cages, you guys.
God, all the cages.
I think about it every day.
Oh, my God, the lion in the cage.
Finesses.
Why don't you let them out? What did they do? Let those lions out.
I can release at least 7 of those lionesses. So I'm
7 lions.
I'm just going to run through these and I don't think
12 announced signings, right, for Boston?
What's that?
Is that right? Is there 12 announced still for Boston? Stuck like on 12?
Yeah.
Good grief.
They've re-signed Jenna Rowe. They've re-signed Kaylee Fracken. Kaylee Fracken Lee. Or just
Kaylee Fracken Lee?
Well, she said that for hockey, it's only going to be Fracken because Anya was giving her a hard time about her display name on Twitter, and Kaylee was like, don't worry.
Kaylee Lee. Yeah.
Okay.
It's going to be Kaylee Fracken on her jersey.
Killian Dempsey, captain, will be back with Pride.
Thank God.
Shocker. What a shocker.
They've already signed one goalie, an excellent goalie, and I heard they've also re-signed Katie Burt and Lavisa Slander. So that's pretty wild to me that they're able to fit all these. But, you know, I'm not a mathematician.
They know they can only play one at a time, right?
Don't forget that they can't pay Lavisa a salary. So that helps them a lot because she has the visa that she has. She gets paid by her day job, and they can't pay her.
I know there was at least one other team that's been very interested in acquiring her, but it hasn't been able to work out for, like you mentioned, with the visa stuff. And she's kind of set in Boston and the area that she's in. Two other names, Taylor House from Quinnipiac and Olivia Zafuto. I hope I said her name right. Defender. Those are all the players that I have listed as they're signed already. They're practicing with their teams and working out with their teams. But for some reason, these teams haven't gotten around to announcing it. So we put it all out there for you.
So that would bring Boston up to 19 signings. They need 20 minimum, right? So Boston's still not done, which is quite a thing we have our schedule. We know this thing's approaching. And
you know who I was wondering about the other day?
Who's that?
Kayla Friesen.
She's one of those players. She's way too good not to be signed by somebody. It would be insane.
I agree with you. I just, she's always around and she's resharing their social posts. And, you know, if you were listening to this and you happen to know her and you wanted to let me know if she was going to play this season, I would not say no to that. Yeah. I know that there was like a possibility that she wouldn't. So maybe she isn't and she's just friends with all of them and wants them to succeed. But I would love to see her play again.
Maybe it's a situation like last year where they had a couple players hanging around and then ended up playing a couple of games.
Oh, right? Yeah. There's always a handful of like Hockey East girls hanging around that you can pick up for like injury stuff, like Megan Rickard out of UNH, just a player that's played for them a couple times. Mary Parker jumped in at the end of the season there. There's no shortage of
Boyle, who signed with Buffalo. Like, you know, she was on the practice player, right? And then she got a full ticket for Buffalo. Like, another example, like that just when you're playing Boston, the players are just around, you know, which is wild.
If you're listening to this, Mama Friesen, and you want to slide into our DMs and let us know if Taylor's
fine. I'm supposed to get a tattoo with her, and we haven't done that yet. So
just let us know. We won't reveal our sources.
Even though we just named one. But,
yeah. No, she's never given me any information that I would use.
Not
a source. Either.
I mean, that's Dan, that was a good list. A very, very good list. And I mean, what's interesting to me is there was a lot of talk about how, you know, how many teams we would see run with three goalies. And Boston is in that position where they can have three all-star goalies. I mean, I guess it's just what you do when you're the Pride, right? But it is interesting to hear that Toronto and Buffalo are done. They both finish with 21 players announced. I have the numbers in front of me. So the estimated cap used for those teams is for Buffalo is $273,500. That's just from the salaries we know. So there's a lot of contracts we didn't have. We know the cap floor, right? We know all those things, but I do want to take a moment, like, the Whale, we're going to talk to Emma Vlasic, a player who disclosed her salary. The Whale have spent, that we know of, $385,600 on their hockey team. Think about that number and think about the first year of this league when we were freaking out about players getting 26,000 when the first time players were getting paid to play. It's really special. It's really, really powerful to see those numbers and to be aware that we're getting to that stage. And, you know, we talked a lot about things that can be still be better, like just with some of the rinks and stuff we talk about, still going, still growing, still getting better, but it's a really exciting time. So I hope that's the thing that kills me. Like, we mentioned some names already, like even with seven teams, there's not a roster spot for a lot of really, really, really good players. Some players, including players who helped build this thing. And as these rosters finish off, as the season approaches, I can't help but think about the players that made a lot of those numbers possible. So just wanted to acknowledge them. And looking at these numbers, whenever we have a disclosed salary, I put it on the sheet and all that, and I go like, damn, that is wild. that is wild that we're here now based on where we were, and can't wait to see what happens next. But obviously we had a lot to cover. We didn't even mention we have a lot of more information about bylaws and transparency and so many things. But I think we're going to wrap it up there, unless anyone has any parting thoughts on our first show in a minute. Dan, what do you got?
I just want to say thanks to everybody out there that's been listening, that's been messaging us with comments, questions, and especially to the players. As you mentioned, we have Emma Vlasic coming up second half of this episode. I'm not going to make this too long of a story, but I tried to reach out to a couple of players to have them on today or tonight, and players are traveling into their towns for the season to start, and some players are practicing, working out. So it was a little challenging, but the silver lining and all that was, and I'm sure these players are going to be listening to this. A bunch of them said, you know, I can't do it tonight, but I would love to come on at another point. We really love your show. You guys do a great job. Like all those kind of things, like, It was a little emotional, honestly, like hearing that kind of stuff or reading, I guess, that those kind of things. I don't really think too highly of you know, myself, especially. This podcast is fun. You know, I think it's great to hang out with friends and talk about passionately about things that we really enjoy, especially this game, this league. So thank you to everybody that's been listening, and hopefully you enjoy this episode and future episodes.
Well, I think very highly of you, Dan. Eleni, any parting words?
No, I just, we have so much fun doing this every time we do. And there's nothing that I love more than hearing y'all's thoughts on stuff that we talked about or didn't talk about, or just in general. I think the podcast has been a really cool way to start conversations that don't get started. I did want to do the corny list. I'm not going to sing the corn song, but Maybe Michelle can pipe it in after. I'm not singing it. I'm so sorry. I had actual band practice yesterday and my voice hurts. The corny list. Top of the corny list. Google translating your French copy for your year one Quebec team. I mean, I just don't know what to say. I just feel like Quebec is like the worst possible market to get off on the wrong foot in.
It's not a good one to try and sneak by. Like,
it's just like when they named Nick Suzuki captain and like everyone was like, does he even speak French? I'm sorry. Like, it's just not the kind of market that it's not forgiving. So that's the top of the corny list. I'm going to say second on the corny list is forgetting to release the second half of your roster. Kind of an important detail. Hopefully the rest of the Pride players will be announced officially, not just by Dan, in time for their preseason games. That's definitely second on the corny
There's
list.
There's so many lions in the cages. It's breaking my heart.
I'm about to call animal control for real.
the ASPCA.
I would say PETA, but they're a scam. So third on the corny list. Third on the corny list. Let's think. This is really important. Third on the corny list, I think, has to be anyone that doesn't like pickles, which unfortunately apparently includes Dan. We are all on the corny list sometimes, so there's nothing to be ashamed of, but I do think that if you have never found a pickle that you enjoyed...
That's on you.
I mean, I don't want to say it's on you, but I would encourage you to continue to expand your pickle horizons, if possible.
I will accept being on this corny list for this particularly valid reason. I'm cool with never having a pickle ever in my life and not having it ever touch any of my food.
You ever had a fried pickle? You know they fry them, right?
Oh, my God.
Would that change anything for you?
No, nothing. the smell of the
Did you know in Texas, when you go to the movie theater, like in the South, not just Texas, but mostly in Texas, you can just buy... Like, even where I grew up in Georgia, you could just buy a movie theater pickle. Like, you walk in, they sell you a pickle in a bag, you sit down and eat it at the movie theater. I didn't realize that shit was weird till I moved to Boston, and I went to the movie theater, and I was like, where the hell are the pickles? I was on a date, and the girl was like, what? So, yeah, that's the corny list. Let me know if you think I missed anybody that should be on the corny list. Don't say me, because I'll block you. I don't care who it is. And that means my girlfriend, I know you're listening. I will block you if you tell me I'm supposed to.
I was wondering if you're going to be upset about the corn kid who's blown up.
I'm not upset about him. He should get that bag. He gets it.
I hope that kid is making millions, by the way. He's probably he was literally at the American Dream Mall, by the way, which is a riot.
Oh, my God. They should they should like do a corn thing because they have Kendall Cornine. Someone should seriously be paying me like $100,000 a year to make up stupid shit for their hockey team to do, because I don't know what's wrong with my brain that this is what so free idea for the Metropolitan Riveters: corn content or be on the corny list. Those are your options.
I mean, there's no good transition from corn to Emma Vlasic, but we have to do it. I mean, they're both food groups, right? Pickles, corn.
There's totally, yeah. No, I mean, not liking pickles.
That's the only pickles that I like.
The only pickles that Dan likes.
But we're really excited. She was a great guest. And stay tuned for the second half of the show where we have Emma Vlasic. And thanks for listening. Subscribe. Tell your friends. And we appreciate you. Appreciate all you guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We are very lucky to be joined with the second half of this episode. The Connecticut Whale, she's been playing with them for the last three seasons. And her career in the PHF / NWHL, she has 14 goals, 12 assists. One of the absolutely best face-off centers, taking face-offs in the PHF. She's won 515 career face-offs with a winning percentage of 56.3. And I'm no mathematician, no math expert. Mike is the math guru here.
It's a lot. It's a big number. That's my expert analysis. Is 56.3 is a whole bunch.
I feel very confident that there is nobody that has won a higher percentage of their face-offs over that period of time.
It's pretty ridiculous.
If there is, there's probably still easily in the top, like, two or three in the league history. Yeah.
You're not supposed to be able to do like 56.3, just to, for listeners.
Yeah,
like,
well, bees aren't supposed to be able to fly either, so let's not even.
Yeah. Oh, going down that road with the bees? Wow.
Okay. No, please no. Not while we don't want to waste our time.
Having said all that, we'd like to welcome to the pod a former Yale University captain, so you know she's really smart if she was a captain at Yale. And she's from the pod, the Connecticut Whale, their star center and alternate captain, Emma Vlasic. Emma, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
We were talking a little bit earlier and you trying to set this up and you said you were doing a little bit of training a couple hours ago. What does that look like for you as you get closer to the season now? Now we have like a start date and some games scheduled and preseason games and all that kind of stuff. What is your workouts kind of looking like these days?
Yeah, so they kind of change throughout the course of the summer and kind of like you said, depending on, you know, where we are in the summer, it's going to look a little different. So I train at Prentice, which is in Stamford, a great gym that I've been going to now since I started with the Whale. And it's very hockey specific training, which is great. And a lot of stuff I've actually never done before. So, but yeah, I mean, it looks a little different. I think you're probably doing less, you know, sled work heading into the season than you are maybe earlier on in the summer. So it's kind of, you know, quicker plyo sort of based stuff as we kind of get closer and then just kind of, you know, hoping to kind of maintain a high level once you're kind of in season and, you know, you're on the ice a bit more. So, but yeah, no, it's been good and excited to get going here.
So let's back up just a little bit. First of all, congrats on your deal and coming back for another season.
Thank you.
This is obviously, you know, you've been with this team for a while now, to the point now where you're, you know, like a identified member of the leadership group. Was there ever any doubt for you that you'd be back for this fourth season, or is this something that you knew right away, even before the end of the last season, the playoffs, that you knew you wanted to keep playing pro?
Yeah, no, I mean, I love this team. I love this organization. I think, like you said, it's crazy that it's already been 4 years and time definitely flies. I still feel like I'm one of the younger girls, but then we have people coming in that are starting to be like in the 2000 birth years. So it's makes you feel old real fast. But no, it's been a great experience so far. And I think, you know, it's also the people, I think, that make it what it is. And I think it's a great group of girls. And obviously we've added some key pieces, you know, in the time I've been there. But, you know, Colton Orr has been a great coach. And I think he started the same year I started. So it's kind of been, you know, great kind of growing, you know, with him as a coach as well. And kind of seeing how we've, you know, improved it just in, I mean, my first season, I think, you know, I feel like we won maybe like two games or something. And then, you know, it's just fast forward to this past year where it's obviously a lot different picture and, you know, obviously we come one win short of our goal, but yeah, it's amazing already just the improvement that we've seen and in my 4 years, and hopefully we can, you know, continue to work towards our ultimate goal. So
one win short, but the regular season champions, can't forget that when there's more than just one game to decide something, the Whale were the champs, as I like to mention to folks. You chose to disclose your salary. It looks like a bunch of the other Whale players have too. We're wondering if this was maybe something that leadership on the team talked about. I know it's been a topic of this offseason. Is there something in the water? What's going on with so many of the Whales choosing to disclose?
Yeah, we actually didn't talk about that. But I think just, you know, from a personal standpoint, I think, you know, like in the NHL, everybody knows everyone's salary. And obviously I know we're not quite there yet, but I think it's just important for the league just in general as we move forward. And I think just having that, you know, transparency of, you know, where everybody is. And I think, obviously in a lot of the pro leagues, people's salaries are disclosed and yeah, I felt like it was a good time. I think this was the first year where they were kind of making that an option. So I figured why not. And I think, like I said, that transparency hopefully is good moving forward as the salaries do continue to climb. And, but yeah, it wasn't really anything we talked about. I didn't know that. I'm not sure if the Whale was the number one team in terms of the amount of people that disclosed, but yeah, no, I think it's just from a personal standpoint, I think just something that I thought was a good idea. And I'm not sure what the other numbers are looking like though.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
So I think personally, and I think we all sort of have agreed at various points that this Whale roster is really, really stacked. There's a lot of stuff that was really good last year that's being built on. You've, you know, got Patty Kaz finalists coming in and you've got Miri back in net, which is really cool. But I don't know how much, you know, it, I know it varies from player to player. I don't know how much you have been keeping up with what the other rosters have looked like. But do you think there's anybody in the league that you're looking at their roster and thinking, sheesh, that's a little intimidating?
Yeah. I mean, I think, like you said, I really like where our team is, and I actually haven't paid too much attention. I think some of the teams also haven't really, like Boston, I don't think has announced quite a few of their girls. Yeah, so
they haven't.
I don't really, I've heard some things here and there, but who knows? But it, you know, they obviously always put together a good team. So, you know, expecting them to be a tough matchup as always. I think Minnesota signed some really high end girls as well. And then, yeah, I'm excited to see like what, you know, Toronto and Montreal and have to offer. Obviously Toronto is really strong last year. And I think, you know, I think all the teams honestly get better every year. And I think, you know, you've seen that with our team. I think you've seen that with, you know, Riveters, Buffalo. So, but I think, yeah, Boston is probably going to be, you know, the top team as far as like what on paper, what, you know, our biggest competition will be. But we'll see. I think it's, you know, it's a very different style game than playing like a Minnesota. I think Minnesota is a bit more, you know, fast kind of, you know, run and gun kind of hockey. So we'll see. I don't know. It'll be exciting.
Nice. And speaking of additions to the Whale recently signed your college teammate, Mao. How exciting is that to be reunited with her again?
Yeah, no, it's great. I mean, we overlapped for 3 years, so it was good kind of, you know, seeing her evolve as a leader at Yale, and then obviously, you know, playing against her, against the prize. She's obviously always been a really strong D for them, and, you know, I think has won twice now. So, yeah, I think she'll really be able to help us on the back end. And, you know, I think even just from the Yale days, she was always, you know, very good defensively, but I think she had that offensive piece to her game too. And I think that that's really going to, you know, help us and, you know, really round out our D core as well.
You know, I remember one time I looked her up. It was probably when she joined the league. And the first thing that came up was a YouTube video of her breaking the glass at Yale with her slap shot. It was the first thing that I ever saw from her. And I was like, geez.
It's a heavy shot. Yeah, no, I do. I do remember that, that practice. Yeah.
You mentioned Boston. They're the first game that you have on the schedule, first regular season game. You know, the schedule comes out, we all look for different things. What do you look for when the schedule comes out? Is there anything that you immediately look for?
Not really. No, I think just, I don't know. I feel like as a player, like in that mindset, I feel like it's kind of just like, I like to just kind of take it week by week and, you know, whoever the next, I mean, we know the first game is going to be in Boston against Boston. And, we've been told that, I guess they're doing their banner raising ceremony that game against us, which, should make for an exciting matchup. So, yeah, I mean, other than that, I think just, I guess maybe kind of seeing where, when you're going to Montreal or Toronto up north to Canada. But, other than that, I think just, I try not to pay attention too much to the schedule and kind of just, you know, as it comes, be ready to go. And, but the first one against Boston should definitely be, a heated battle based on how things ended last year. So that'll be exciting.
Our audience couldn't see it, but you were smirking when you were saying that. being there for opening, yeah, Boston with the banner and everything, is that a little, not that you guys need it obviously, but is that a little more fuel to your fire, so to speak, within the group and personally?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I think even just what happened last year, I think that just, you know, being so close and then, you know, not winning, I think it just makes you want it even more. And I think especially against the team that obviously beat you in the finals, I think it's, you know, it adds fuel to that fire. So I think it's, you know, you sometimes have to go, you know, down those paths and come so close and not quite get it to really realize what you have to do to be there. And I think having that experience factor is a huge thing too. And I think obviously a lot of the Boston girls, you know, a majority of their team had been there before, and you know, they had, you know, played in championships in this league. And I think obviously for us, that was the best we'd ever done in our organization's history. So it was, you know, kind of feeling that out. And I think that we're a lot, you know, better equipped this year to kind of handle the, you know, the pressures that come along with, you know, a one game championship sort of situation.
Sometimes you have to lose to know how to win.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So we mentioned how good you are at taking faceoffs statistically. Playing center is such a very specific skill set, and that's a big part of it. I was wondering, like, what kinds of things you do to develop that sort of skill? Like, how do you become good at that?
I don't know. I think that's a good question. I think it's just, I feel like for me, like, it's, I kind of am more of like a quick, like reflexive, like relying on my reflexes, I would say, just like the quickness factor. I mean, it's not, I'm not trying to overpower anyone. I'm certainly not the strongest person usually in the face-off dot, but I think just being quick and like, you know, knowing how to, I think every referee is different too, I think, and just kind of understanding how certain people drop the puck and, you know, being able to kind of be ready and make, you know, trying to move, you know, move faster than your opponent, I guess. But I don't know. I mean, we worked on it a lot in college, I guess. And, you know, it's, I think, harder, you know, in the pros so far to really find the time, just because, you know, in college, it's the kind of thing you do after practice. And obviously you'd have, you know, you'd have the ice for a while after practice ended. So those are things you'd work on. But, you know, and you know, so far in the pros, it's a little bit different just with ice time and stuff. So it is harder to kind of fit in terms of when you're working on it. But I think just, yeah, I don't know, just that quickness factor, that's what I try to focus on, I guess.
I never even thought about how all the refs are different. That never would have occurred to me. But that makes sense.
We're going to get to some fun questions. I got to ask something, though. Like, we're talking about developing and stuff like that. Were you able to, obviously, your brother is in the NHL now. You two train together this offseason, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, so when we were in Nova Scotia, we had a family trip for a couple of weeks. So we trained up there together, which was a lot of fun. So we did a couple of the workouts that Alex brought along. So, yeah, we were able to work out together in Nova Scotia, which was a lot of fun.
Who's going to have more points this season, you or him?
I don't know. Hopefully me. I mean, he's a defenseman, so. Hopefully me, but he plays a lot more games. So I think we play like a quarter of the amount of games he does. So maybe that's, we'll see.
He'd have to average it. That wouldn't be fair. Yeah. Because no, he plays like 80 games.
82, so. Yeah. So it's a little different.
Who has some of the better nicknames on the Whale aside from Pickles? Because that's obviously a great nickname.
Wow, that's a tough one. I feel like mine's just like very different because it's nothing like people hear it and there's like they have to be told like what it's associated with, because it doesn't usually, I feel like people's nicknames are like somewhat associated with their last name, but mine is just like a whole different word. So obviously it's related to my last name, but I don't know. I'm trying to think of, there's a lot of new girls. I feel like half the team is new, so we're going to have to try to develop some nicknames. But you know, the people coming back, I would say it's usually always just based on people's names. I think I can't think of anyone that has a completely different sort of name. So
Mike believes that Colton is the best dressed coach in the league.
I know, I have eyes in my head.
I'm not going to give my opinion right now because I haven't had time to think about it and compare pictures, but he is a well-dressed man. Who would you say is the best dressed Whale on game day? That's not Colton.
That's not Colton. I'm trying to think. I don't know. Taylor Gerard has some good outfits, I guess, that she brings. She usually is pretty well dressed, I guess. I don't know. We have a pretty solid group. I'm trying to think who else. Abby Ives usually is the most dressed down, I would say, of everybody. she's got the chill vibe, that's for sure. But obviously, it works for her. So I'm trying to think who else. I don't know. Yeah, I feel like we have a solid solid group as far as, but yeah, I think Colton definitely is. I definitely agree that he's, I don't really pay too much attention to the other coaches, but I feel like as far as, you know, his suits and stuff, I feel like from the NHL, he you know, comes from, you know, a good suit game. So I would have to agree with that.
The last one, I'm sorry, I didn't write this down, you guys, but you all know I'm going to ask this because it's my favorite question. Speaking of Taylor, when Taylor was on, I asked her what like the funniest thing she had ever heard or like the best chirp was that she had ever heard. And she told me the story about a girl who told her that her eyebrows like looked terrible. It was either her eyebrows or her eyelashes in game. And it like really threw her off. So I was wondering if you have ever heard anything directed at a player or even at a ref that was particularly funny or memorable.
Yeah, I actually did listen. I listened to that episode and I thought that was really, really good. I don't know. I don't know, that one's hard to beat. I feel like people say kind of silly things all the time, but I don't know. I certainly don't have a story like that. It would have to be, I mean, back in like my CYA days, we had a lot of like, there would always be like fights between us and like Little Caesars and like all the Detroit teams. For some reason, it was like CYA and then Wisconsin too. We would get into all these fights, but, and we were like 14 and I don't know.
Yeah, but 14-year-old girls are mean, though. Like, yeah. If I had to play for a team named after a pizza place at 14, I mean, that's just, it's too easy, almost.
Yeah, no, it was, that was almost, like, the most, like, fighting and aggressiveness, I feel like, at that level. And then everything just kind of gets more tame as you go on. But, yeah, Little Seat CompuWare, that one was always, yeah, anytime we went to the Detroit tournaments, I feel like the Chicago-Detroit rivalry was always very alive.
Maybe we'll get PHF teams in Chicago, yeah, Detroit, and get that rivalry going. That,
yes, exactly. That'd be great.
That'd be awesome. Do you even like pickles?
I do. I really like the bread and butter pickles. Those are really good.
Yes.
Underrated. Like a sandwich or something. Those are great.
For the record, I can't stand pickles and like,
wait, that's got to be the soundbite at the very beginning so that everybody thinks that you're talking about her, and then later it's about the
pickle. No, just like the smell of it just like makes me gag. But like, Emma is like, and she knows this, she's like one of my favorite players to talk to. Just really smart and knowledgeable about the game. And just, I feel like I could talk to her for hours after games, and I don't want to sit there and keep her an hour after a game. But I just want to say thank you for doing this. It really means a lot to us to have players on, to have get their personalities out and get it out there for everybody. So I really hope you have a great season. I'm sure I'll see you at some point soon, maybe preseason, but definitely during the season. So all the best to you this season.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. It was great being on, and you know, always great talking to you guys. And I mean, this is the way that you guys cover the league and the players, I mean, that's how we grow the game, and that's a huge part of it. So just know that, you know, we all really appreciate the work that you guys do as well.
Thanks so much.
Have a good night.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Emma.
Is there a way to change that voice? It's horrible. Every time that I hear it, it's like,
makes me so uncomfortable.
Something about the like lack of emotion that stresses me out so much.
It makes me, I don't feel safe with that voice.
Okay, go ahead, Dan.
All right, you guys ready?
Yeah.